Here it is, podcast, September 7th, 2020, Labor Day.
Labor Day. Happy Labor Day.
Tonight, as promised in some earlier promos, we got Sean here, who's a retired Chicago police officer within the last year. We're just kind of going to let him talk about, you know, what's happening up there, what kind of, you know, the day and the life. You know, he's still got friends up there who are working and dealing with it every day, so... Sean, yeah. You know, we're gonna open up the floor to you. You just tell us kind of like, you know,
a little intro. You know, that's who you are, when maybe when you joined the police force and, or where you grew up, little stuff like that, or anything you want to say.
I was born and raised in Chicago. Atypical Irish, you know, family up in Chicago. Just a sister, two kids. Which was unusual. My dad was born in Ireland.
She had like 12.
Yeah. I think the largest we had in the family was 8. So, but my dad was born in Ireland. He left when he was 17 years old, and like they're in the mid 50s.
Yeah. So you guys came over late.
Yeah. Well, he went to England first for a little bit, and then came here. So he was more. My dad was a stationary engineer. He was a 399 union guy up north, and. So they worked on air conditioning units and high pressure boilers and all that stuff. So everybody kind of figured that would be Sean's path. You know, that, you know, follow dad's footsteps and
like I was going the trades.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I was always one of those kids that when I heard a siren outside the house, instead of running to the window to find it, I'd be on the bike trying to find it. You know, I mean, I just wouldn't see if it's coming by the house. I was trying to find it. And, so it, you know, it was always kind of in my blood. So this is what I wanted to do. My collegiate career did not go quite how the plans were, and after getting kicked out of college, the old man looked at me and said, "You know, what are you going to do?" I said, "I don't know. You know, it just happened." And I disappeared for a couple of days and came back, and of course, he was even more pissed than he was with the letter. And I said I came up with Plan B, and he's like, "What's that?" And I held my right hand up and. I, Sean Ronan, do solemnly swear to uphold the Constitution. He's like, "What?" I'm like, "I joined the Army." He's like, "That's not what I was talking about." I go, "Too late, I'm in." So I did some reserve time, got lucky. I got activated in support of Desert Storm.
Yeah.
And then when I got back, I started testing with police departments all over Illinois. And I was going to Western Illinois University at the time. I got hired by Macomb, Illinois, which is where the university was. It was a little rural town. Out by the Quad, or south of the Quad Cities, between Peoria and Quincy.
Peoria.
You know, so I was a cornfield cop, and then Chicago came through, and I worked there for 27 years until I retired this year.
So you started off in a rural area and then moved into the city.
Mm-hmm.
So what made you want to go from a rural area to some place like Chicago, which is kind of known for being a little... apprehensive towards police?
My knowledge base at the time wasn't about being anti-police or, you know, any of that. It was just, I was born in Chicago. I mean, when I thought about being a cop, it was just, I'm going to be a Chicago cop. That's it. You know, I mean, this is where I live. This is where I'm going to do it. And, you know, let's have some fun. And so that's kind of how it worked out for me.
That makes sense, because I'm sure that place had a little bit more... you know, significance to you. Now you've gone out and you come back and you've done a few things. It's like, all right, so now I want to help out the place that I grew up in. Right. That, you know.
And, well, I guess the question is, like, even with, you know, inside, you know, being a police officer in Chicago, and I mean, did they, like, send you to, like, the neighborhood that you lived in? Or did they send you to different neighborhoods?
No, so kind of the way they do it is if you're designated as the class president or class coordinator, you get to pick where you want to go. And usually that person will take the nicer districts like where I grew up or, you know, what have you. The way I looked at it was, if that's what I wanted, I would have stayed in the cornfields.
Right.
You know, I wanted to be the police. I wanted to have fun. I wanted the action and the excitement. And I worked the west and south sides my entire career. Right. You know, except for maybe a short time. But, you know. So I was in the thick of it for all of it.
I'm familiar with the South Side. I'm not, you know, not real well versed, but, you know, the West, I guess, must have been exciting too, apparently.
Yeah. Yep. They're always competing.
Right. But, as far as, you know, What's like a normal day? What would have been a normal day for you?
You know, for the average patrol officer when I was in uniform, you know, it's just, it's handling routine radio calls, whatever comes in. You know, you have what we call up in Chicago is our in-progress job. So robbery in progress is shots fired, person shot, you know, anything along those lines. Those, right. You know, naturally amp you up a little bit and, you know, you get a lot more resources going to those because they're typically just violent scenes when you get there. But, you know, like we say, it's 90% boredom or routine mundane stuff, yeah, you know,
and then
10% sheer terror.
Sheer terror, it's just chaos.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
well, that's a lot of the main focus is that 10%. And I think that's where a lot of this stuff stems from. It's just those situations where, yeah, it could be, you know, just your normal person, like doing a traffic stop, whatever, or it could be somebody that's got a warrant or they decide that they're not going back to, you know, prison, mm-hmm. or anything like that. And it's, you know, you get to kind of look at everything. So I almost wonder, is like, if people take that into consideration, that it's, you're not looking at people like, oh, I bet this person is doing something wrong. It's just, you know, that there's a chance, and especially given what part of town you're in, or if something is going on in the immediate area and you're looking for somebody, I don't think people take like the other factors into account. So like if you're in the area looking for somebody and you stop somebody, like, you know, what's going through your head at that point? I'm sure it's a million different things.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, if they were able to analyze it, I'd say, yeah, there's probably a million things going through your mind. But in the moment, it's no different than, you know, those of us that were in the military and deployed. Right. You rely on your training. You're just, yeah, you're not thinking. You're just reacting
to your training.
You know,
yeah.
Again, and it's that muscle memory and, you know.
Right. And I think that's what people a lot of times forget inside, you know, in law enforcement, that, you know, you want to get home.
Right.
You want to get home to your family.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're dealing with, you know, armed felons, mm-hmm. or they possibly armed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if we talk about, you know, some of the things that happened, you know, like, you know, the one guy that happened in Wisconsin, you know, before they got out of the car, the dispatcher said, hey, this guy's got warrants.
Right.
So they're going to arrest him now.
Yeah.
That's it. They're, obviously, he's broke his restraining order. He's not supposed to be there.
Yeah.
But,
and
you know, he's getting arrested.
Yeah. And he broke it for sexual assault, and he took her keys and was there and wouldn't leave, and she called the police.
Please.
Like, why are they
questioning, you know, the
action?
Why
are they so focused on just the end part of that? Like, a lot of the videos that I see, because I'll kind of go through and look at like left wing, like, you know, video clips and stuff, and like Reddit and shit like that. And you see these video clips of stuff like this, because every time anything like this happens, it's going to go there before you see it on TV.
Yeah.
And you're going to see the end part of all of it and the reaction from everybody,
right.
And that's it. That's right. All you ever see. And then everybody goes through, they tear shit up, and then the actual body cam footage, which we have now, comes out, and you see the initial part. And it's nothing like what they were portraying.
Right. It's, you know, I mean, and again, this, oh my God, we can start this back to the professor from Harvard that was, you know, detained by the police and, you know, for mm-hmm. climbing through his window, and there was the infamous beer summit at the White House. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, that was the first incident where it put law enforcement under the microscope. I mean,
right.
You know, okay, fine, we can talk Rodney King in the early 90s, but in our modern time that started kind of this movement of anti-police, second-guessing, Monday morning quarterbacking.
Right.
That was pretty much the first one that
convicting
started.
Convicting in the next day in the media.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, it's mob justice.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, a bunch of armchair politicians.
Yeah. And again, like you're saying, you know, they're looking at a three-second blurb of
right.
a seven-minute video and saying, here, look, you know.
Yeah.
The police are, you know, acting inappropriately, or they're shooting indiscriminately,
right.
or, you know.
Because they're too focused on building this additional context, that rather than looking at, okay, how big of a problem is this really, and what can we do to solve it? It's, oh, well, if I look at this part, that fits the example that I want to take and say, look, this is what's happening. But you don't, like, you can't pick apart one piece and then write your own script after that. It's
right.
You have to look at the reality of the actual situation that happened, and you can't escape from that. And then the footage comes out, and then it's like, well, it doesn't matter. We'll go on to the next thing. We'll just keep
Right, and they never retract, and they never give an apology. It's just, you know, hey, you know what, that ship sailed. Oops, sorry.
The best thing that you get is not even a retraction. It's just they stop talking about it and move on to something else.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and even if you look back to, you know, the Rashad Brooks thing when he was passed out in the Wendy's parking lot, and there's 25 minutes of footage of those officers talking to him,
right,
like in getting him out there, mm-hmm. and they're saying, hey, you know what, you're over the limit, you're gonna have to be arrested,
mm-hmm.
and then as soon as they went to handcuff him, it breaks out.
Why isn't the fact that he got in a physical fight with two police officers, took one of them's taser, was running away, and then pointed at the cop that was chasing
him, mm-hmm. right.
like all you can see is like, oh, they shot him in the drive-thru. Like, they walk up, knock on the window, like, oh, hey, we got one here. Yeah. Pow, pow.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's ridiculous. Right. So you see the entire before part, which everything went, like, none of them were dicks. So we're pulling them out. It was like, you know, like, being really unprofessional or anything. It looked like just, like, somebody who got drunk and passed out in the drive-thru, which happens.
Yeah. But then you had that DA who shows up the next day and says, you know, we're charging these officers mm-hmm. with murder.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and then the GBI comes in and says, "Hey, what are you talking about?
Right.
We haven't even started the investigation, really."
Exactly.
You know?
I mean, you know,
it's maybe just that's grandstanding.
Maybe that's a good.
But then that district attorney ended up getting
indicted for fraud.
You know, he was like the CEO of two of the companies that were awarded some contracts in Atlanta.
Right.
Maybe that's a good. Topic to go into, because I'm curious how it makes you know, like, patrol officer, anyone else in the police department feel when you have people who aren't prosecuting people for the crimes they commit. So you arrest people and then they're back the next day because they refuse to charge them with anything.
I've done this several years, and I learned early on, because I had some very good FTOs, I had some very good bosses that I worked for, great instructors, and you know, they were very realistic about the three-pronged criminal justice system. You know, you had the police, you had the court system, and you had corrections. And like they said, two out of the three, you can't freaking control. So you know, do your portion, and be honest and sincere in what it is that you're trying to do, and you're going to hopefully, you know, save your mental health from going batshit crazy over this stuff.
Yeah. Right, because of, you know.
Like the military, too. You got a lot of people, like, it's hard for people to have, like, regular married family lives. There's mm-hmm. a lot of, like, alcohol abuse. Suicide's a big thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a stressful thing
it's
to go through.
It's definitely, you know... stressful, and you know, and even as a police officer in a large city like yourself, you know, I'm sure I'm not sure, but I'm sure you probably had some incidents that were probably not, you know, like, wow, I'm glad I got home tonight, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's, and this is where, you know, I mean, there's a lot of ball busting in the first responders family, you know, whether it be paramedics, firefighters, law enforcement, you know, we call the firefighters America's heroes. You know, go ahead and just ask them. But, you know, I mean, they can show up to a kitchen fire, break every window in the house for ventilation, and they're thanking them at the end of the day.
Right.
You know, we're always seeing people in the worst possible moment in their life. You know, typically, you know, dad's getting locked up because, you know, it's a domestic, and usually, you know,
eight times out of ten, nobody wants you there.
Right.
And not
or
even
they want you there until somebody's in cuffs, and then it's like, well, what the hell? That's not what we wanted, you know.
Like, well, no, that's what happened,
mm-hmm.
and there's a reason that we're here. This is the reason that we determined.
But then you start, you know, and even the fact, like, then you start pulling IDs, and you're like, oh, well, there's a warrant for your arrest, you know?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, I mean, again, law enforcement is granted a, you know, a huge duty, a huge sense of responsibility and power, if you will, because, you know, we do have the right statutorily to take away people's freedoms. I mean, so, you know, we should be held to a higher standard. I'm okay with that. The problem I have is the immediate Monday morning quarterbacking.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody thinks, you know, and again...
they think policing's an easy job.
It would have to come with an understanding that... So, like, if I would, if I had a solution to come up with. Yeah, higher standards would be part of it. Increased training. So maybe do more like shoot, don't shoot drills. Not even drill, or even more, you know, just like physical training. And increased funding too, because you're not going to get that by stretching people thinner than they already are. You want a better police department? Fine, I do too. So we're going to do that by increasing the options they have, increasing the tools that we can give them, and we're going to have to pay a little bit extra, but if this is such a big issue, then that's the way to do it.
Well, I agree.
I mean, do you think, you know, when you were on the streets of Chicago, I mean, and in these neighborhoods, did they ever, you know, did they ever tell you they wanted less of you guys around?
No, I mean, because they knew the shootings were going on.
Yeah.
You know, and they were going on with us there. So if we pulled out, you know, it's only going to get worse because now it's just it's a free-for-all.
Which is kind of evident right now, really.
Absolutely. I mean, here, just now before I walked, you know, got over here, 4 people shot on the south side of Chicago, you know, over by not too far from Sox Park in the Canaryville area. 4 people shot, 2 children out of the 4.
Jeez.
You know, I mean, and before there was a rule amongst gang members. I mean, there was rules of engagement, which, you know, we're used to, you know, being veterans. I mean, we knew what we were allowed to do. We knew when we could do it. And we knew how far and how much we could do.
Right.
Yeah.
And the gangs, when I first got on the police department, it was that way. You know, if I'm gunning for Chris, and Chris is out there with his old lady and the 2 kids and, you know, baby's mama, guess what?
I'm gonna wait.
I gotta wait.
Yeah.
Or I'm gonna walk right up on Chris
and gun him down
and
personally.
I'm gonna do it in front of the family, but he's gonna catch every round.
Right.
And that would probably be something where it was more personal, like, nah, I don't care if his family's around.
Absolutely. You know, now it's like they're standing on the south end of Broadway and they're shooting down to, you know, the Bridgestone Arena.
They don't care who they hit.
And they don't care. As long as they get Chris, if they hit 5 more people, like,
whatever.
Yeah.
I grew up in a My families are from outside of Boston. I know it's not quite like Chicago, but there's a lot of the similar mentalities and different, like, people. But, like, Chicago got a lot of this gang violence for some reason. Like, there was a... The only thing I know is there's some sort of power vacuum with all the gangs, and now they're all in separate little groups, and they're all fighting over territories.
Right.
And that's what's causing a lot of the shootings that go on.
We, you know, the Chicago Police Department, we, you know, when I was there, we were very good at doing long-term investigations on the gangs, you know, the gangster disciples, the vice lords, the Latin kings, Satan disciples, you know, you name them.
Jeez.
We've all done long-term investigations on them, and we have dismantled their hierarchy. We are very good at doing that. What we're not so good at doing is once we've dismantled that hierarchy,
what to do then?
How do we backfill and prevent the wildings, if you will,
to take over.
Right. And, you know, and that's what happened was, you know, we took out Larry Hoover. We sent him to prison, you know, with our federal partners for, you know, the rest of his life. But nobody backfilled and, you know, started hammering the underlings or, you know, at least worked with them to a point.
Yeah, that's interesting because, like, you know, by all means, like, he should have been arrested. That should have happened the way it happened. But yeah, you're saying, what's the solution afterwards? But otherwise, you just keep cutting the head off the snake, and you know, it just keeps growing back.
And it does grow back, but the problem is until it grows back, there's no rules. It's everybody trying to make a name for themselves. So it's just, it becomes the Wild West, and, you know, they don't care. Again, they don't care who they're shooting at. They don't care who's around. As long as they get bodies, that's all they care about because it gives them their street credentials.
Yeah, it was a couple of years ago. I was talking to a detective in the Hermitage area, and he was talking about the police being understaffed and kind of really spread out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I guess it's better than lowering the hiring standards just to get warm bodies in here. He looks at me and goes, nah, well, they already did that.
Oh, no. And every major department's done that. I mean, when I took the test... I took the test for Chicago back in December of 91 when I got back from Desert Storm. And all said and done, between April and the April test and December test for the veterans, 36,000 people take the Chicago Police Department exam.
Wow, okay. That's a lot.
And that was pretty consistent numbers any time they gave the exam.
Well, I guess, I mean, it is a huge freaking city.
It is, but now we're struggling, you know, the Chicago Police Department is struggling to get 7,000 people to sign up.
Right.
Well, it went down because the economy started to, you know, flourish. So again, you know, we're going to work in the private sector, make more money, or, you know, whatever they think. But now, you know, now because of the perception with the public.
Now that nobody wants to, everybody's ready to retire.
Right. You know,
why do you want to continue to do this job if you're going to go in these neighborhoods and they just don't even care?
Why?
Or you don't even have the support of your local, you know, people that are elected to help you.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you
look at the mayor is basically like, yeah, Ryan, like, what the fuck are you supposed to do?
Right. And she's, you know, Mary Lori Lightfoot out there just running around. I just feel like she's like just destroying that city.
No.
Goes off to Maine and takes a vacation while they're, you know, the citizens are dying. And
Beetlejuice doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
No, it's, I mean, it's always, it's been the longstanding attitude. And again, I don't really care what party you belong to or believe in.
Right.
It's politicians have the set of rules for us, and they get their exemptions.
And they get their exemptions.
You know, and they do what they want. And then that's both parties. You know, that will always be
like, well, it will always be the case until it's a rules for thee, not for me.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But it'll always be that until we decide to finally, you know, as a nation, grow a set of balls and say, we have the president for 8 years, but yet we've got, pick them. You got Joe Biden's been in office for 47 years.
Yeah.
Ted Kennedy was there for how many years? You know, I mean, and on the Republican Party, too, there was still, you know, until they draw a line in the sand and say enough of the career politicians, they come in, holier than thou with all these glorious dreams, but they all leave multimillionaires.
Right.
That's what they're saying. It's irritating. They're like, they're trying to get Joe Biden elected. Like, he's going to change things. Motherfucker's been in politics for half a goddamn century.
Right. And hasn't done shit. Right. And then 8 years of as the vice president.
Yeah. What about the 94 crime bill?
The 94 crime bill. I mean, which incarcerated thousands of minorities.
Now he's the one that's leading the BLM charge.
Here's your guy. Yeah,
it's the hypocrisy.
Whichever
way the wind blows, they're going to, you know.
And then a lot of the gaslighting that they just constantly do. You know, with, like, Joe, I'm totally against fracking. There will be no more.
Fossil
fuel will be gone.
Then he goes this place.
I'm like, no. I never said, tell Trump he's a liar.
Yeah.
I never said I would end fracking. It's like,
he's just trying to say the thing that gets you elected so that, I guarantee you, like, if it happens that Biden gets elected, all this riots and stuff will stop, and they'll just dust their hands off like they've already won and go away.
But then
all those people are fighting, we're like, yeah, and then they just like, all right, thanks for helping me get elected. See you in about 3.5 years.
What virus? Oh, we don't know what's going on.
No, you don't have to wear a mask.
Just send the National Guard in there and smash them.
Yeah.
And then that's how it'll end.
In fact, next Halloween, we're not allowing people to wear masks. It's racist now.
Exactly.
But I know we talked about, you know, we did one earlier with my dad, who was a retired deputy sheriff in the county that I grew up in, you know, and he said a lot of the same things, you know, and it was Farmtown, Ohio, and, you know, Clark County Sheriff's Department, you know, and he said a couple things, like, he goes, you know, but sometimes, you know, he goes, I was the good cop, you know, and my partner was the bad cop. You know, and sometimes you just didn't fool around with them. When they decided that they said they were going to stay in the car, you just drug them out of the car.
And I'm willing to bet Dad started policing in the 60s.
I'd say in the 70s.
Yeah.
Early 70s, okay. He started doing that.
But you're talking about different times. I mean, I was born in 1970. I mean, You're talking about when they say it takes a village to raise a family, they weren't kidding about it.
No, it really does. Right.
You know, and if you were doing something stupid in the neighborhood,
right.
the neighbor would call you out on it. The neighbor would discipline you.
Right.
You know, and the parents would discipline you again because the neighbor had to do something.
Yeah, because the neighbor had to do something about your stupid ass.
I really just wish
I got spanked by many of another mom.
I wish we could apply that to places like Chicago. I wish we could apply that where people would want to take care of their own communities.
Right. And I think really, just the breakdown of just, you know, the nuclear family in America. And
That's been
I was watching. I'm trying to think of who it was. But he talked about, you know, policing in America, and he said, you know, because when there's no fathers and there's no, you know, fathers around for these young men, they're going to rebel.
Right.
They're going to rebel, and then, you know, the first man they, you know, who actually asserts authority on them is a problem.
Absolutely.
Because they've never had anybody tell them, no,
right.
You're not going to do that.
Yeah. And you hope it's somebody respectable and responsible, but more often than not, it's an adult gang member.
Right.
And that's why
they don't have any care because they're only in the, if you want to talk about, you know, just being in that system that was created really by, if you think about it, by the Democrats. LBJ created the Great Society, which was created the baby mama climate.
Right.
And said, hey, you know, for every kid you have, the father doesn't have to be there. Actually, if he's there, you're not going to get the money.
Right.
I think that was a big, you know? Yeah, I think that was a big part of it. Another big part of it is our glorification of that life, that sort of baby mama fucking, you know,
gangster kind of lifestyle. And then, you know, they started kind of wearing it as a badge, like, oh, I got all these baby mamas and all these kids.
Well, that goes outside of, like, the race issue, too, because even in other cities that are predominantly white, like, all the, there's still, like, dirtbag, you know.
Plenty of, I grew up in probably the biggest white trash city in Ohio, you know.
And but it's that similar mentality is that I don't take personal responsibility for everything I do, and it kind of goes back, and I think that everything is pointless, so they're just fucking, it's like never had any structure.
Right.
Never been shown anything, so obviously you look around the world and, oh, this is what's out there.
Yeah, exactly, like I said, but the town I grew up in, you know, in Ohio, is every time I go back there, I just like, it just keeps getting worse.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was already kind of on the decline when I grew up there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in a very kind of depressed kind of area.
I grew up in Vermont, and the opioid epidemic destroyed a lot of the smaller towns.
The same way. Now you go there, and, you know, in Ohio.
And
you know,
the meth problem.
It seems to be more of a southern drug.
Yeah. But you do have it in the Midwest, too, in the more rural areas.
Midwest.
You know. Yeah, the Midwesterners, they paid attention in chemistry lab.
Mm-hmm. The one class.
The one class they paid attention to.
Paid attention. Shop class, chemistry.
All right, so acid and base are not good. Okay, let me just remember that, you know.
Yeah.
I'll play the sociological, you know, I'll bite at that. You know, I get it. When you have shit schools, when you have single parents, when you have, you know,
but there's still some accountability.
Call them whatever you want. I'm up in Chicago. We call them food deserts. You know.
Yeah.
You know, when you're living on, you know, Fritos and pop all the time and not eating like you should and you know, smoking packs of cigarette. I mean, you know, they've only been saying since, you know, the late 70s, early 80s that smoking's bad for you. You know. Right. I mean, so you know, again, I understand the sociological point. The problem is again, like you said, you know, this has been going on since LBJ. It's been encouraged.
Yeah, and, we're just now, you know, starting to fight against it.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I had guys that I worked with on the department up north that grew up in Cabrini Green. Okay. And fine. They, you know, some were black, some were, you know, Italian, some were Polish, some were, you know, whatever nationality you can decide on. But they used it for what it was. It was temporary housing to get you back on your feet.
Right.
You know, and when they started to shut down Cabrini Green, they were protesting, like, you're taking our house away. No, we're taking our shit back. I mean, you know, you didn't want to live in high rises, so we're tearing them down.
You hated it, didn't do anything positive with it.
Right.
And just kind of tore the areas down. So it's like, you can, that's the thing, is that you need to stop infantilizing black people. Like, you need to stop, like, you know, it's just letting the cycle of victimhood go, is because there are too many black people out there that are successful.
Mm-hmm.
And that you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between them and, you know, anyone else.
But they got this neighborhood.
Exactly.
But they see that as some sort of, like, assimilation that they're not willing to go to. Like, oh, white people have kept this down, they've eaten this down. So if you get too educated, or you speak too properly, or you study, you know, a lot in school, like, that's not looked upon well by people in those neighborhoods in Chicago, like, to be somebody who's trying to make themselves better. They just want to perpetuate this cycle of just, like, that victimhood, gangster lifestyle.
Really? And victimhood and gangster lifestyle. I'm being held down by the, like, man.
Using it to justify, you know, here comes the police.
Comes the police to beat us down again.
It's not their fault, but it's everyone's problem.
Right.
But, you know, at some point you have to take personal responsibility for the things you do.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's the truth.
But again, you know, and it's not just, you know, the poor, you know, communities. It's you really, it's society as a whole. I mean, you know,
yeah.
We're in the middle of the trophy, you know,
generation.
That's not
just for the Chicago area. That's for
everywhere.
Everybody
gets a trophy. Everybody participates. You know, right. No. Your kid sits in center field and picks his nose and plays with flowers.
Yeah.
He should not get a trophy.
Yeah, and
should
what are you
out there playing?
Exactly.
And what are you doing for that kid? You're basically you're setting up his or her life so that they don't have goals. Mm-hmm. Goals are meaningless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you get to the adult life and goals are meaningless, guess what? You're not going to do shit.
Right. You know. And I mean, even when you look and say the kid
in the
center field who's just out there playing with flowers and picking his nose. Obviously, you know, baseball is not the right choice for him.
Right.
Yeah,
maybe exactly. We should find band or art or something
some,
else.
Right. Get him into some pottery classes or something.
Maybe
take those boogers, make a vase.
Yeah.
Right.
Turns out positive.
But, you know, now it's just like, oh, then they have this, then you have, like I said, then you have this kid who doesn't, not well at baseball, but he got a trophy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, look, I did great in baseball.
Right.
No, you didn't. No, you were terrible.
Right.
They'll never understand the difference in feeling that you have between just somebody giving you something, which is nice if somebody gives you something. But it feels so much better when you work hard and you earn something and you get that reward and you're like, oh, I get it.
There's fulfillment.
Yeah. I mean, and you look at, you know, I mean, if, again, you know, nothing ever goes smoothly. So, okay, you know what? I mean, like Thomas Edison said, you know, I didn't learn, you know, 150,000,
well,
you know, ways to make a light bulb. If,
well, according to Joe Biden, Thomas Edison did not make the light bulb.
Right, yeah. But I found 150 ways not to do it, you know, so.
He's probably in the same fucking room with the guy.
Actually, a black guy made the light bulb. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
He's from Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Oh, jeez.
And so, to the point when I was watching that video, when he was, like, in that church in Kenosha and giving his speech to, like, six people and his security team.
Yeah.
And he was like, there was one point where he just kind of like, just turned around and like, was like walking backwards, just back against the audience and just kind of like talking to the mic. Mm-hmm. Then he turned around and he's like, had this surprised look on his face. I'm like, oh. And then he like whispered into the mic like this and said that America's being destroyed by Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is going on?
You know,
I almost felt sorry for the guy.
He used to be disingenuous, but now he's just like a fucking sentient houseplant. Like, they'll roll them out here like, okay, Joe, here you go.
Yeah.
Just read the fucking prompter, which whoever made the teleprompts, like, can you use a larger font?
Because
I can tell he can't read half of the shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he just tries to ad-lib, and that's the worst thing
you
can
do.
Yeah.
And then you know, they
had this, try to help
this,
the guy.
This black lady get up and ask him a question, and she's like, you know, they gave me a piece of paper that, you know, that I was supposed to read off of. He goes, but I'm going to tell you. He goes, I can't do, she's like, I can't do this.
He should have looked at her and said,
I'm going to ask a question
I'm going to ask a question that I want to hear.
Yeah.
And Biden should have looked at her and said, you know what, it's okay, I can't read the teleprompter either.
Well, yeah, just wanting the truth, you know.
Well,
that's a big thing, yeah.
Absolutely, and you know, you look outside of the election, I mean, going back to what Jay was talking about before, you know, with things that could help law enforcement with training and funding.
Right.
And, you know,
I mean, really, even my dad said, he goes, the training that he goes, when I first started getting on with the Sheriff's Department in Clark County, he goes, it's completely different than it was then. He goes, really? He goes, I came in, you know, went through a small academy. It was about a month or so. And most of it I learned on the job.
Right. Absolutely.
And he goes, and that was kind of the training. But he goes, as time progressed, we got involved with more training.
Right.
Like in the 80s, we really started like, you just don't want to go in there and bust heads.
Right.
You need to kind of get in there and like, and he's like, something that he goes, I always did that anyway. He goes, I'd rather de-escalate a situation way before.
Right.
He goes, the last thing I want to do is draw my gun.
Right. Exactly.
That's the last fucking thing I want to do.
You know, I mean, and that's the big misconception is, you know, and again, I blame the media because this is the...
Because they think they portray the police as these trigger-happy guys out there.
You know, I mean, we go... I mean, I will tell you, you know, the one thing about working in law enforcement is I don't believe in absolutes.
Right.
You know, nobody's absolutely guilty. Nobody's absolutely innocent. Nobody's, you know, whatever. I mean, it's just absolutes I don't really necessarily agree with. However, I will say as close to an absolute as I can get, you know, I
truly do not believe there is anybody in law enforcement, regardless of the color of the uniform they wear, whether they wear a badge, a shield, you know, a 5-point star, a 7-point star, makes no difference. Nobody wakes up and says, you know what, it's, you know, September 10th. Ah, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to shoot someone today.
Yeah.
You know, nobody, everybody that works in law enforcement hopes to go that 30-year career and just not exist, but just get by.
Right.
It seems like any of the things like that that come from police officers are always from officers who have gotten into some trouble before, or it wasn't really a thing they planned to do, but it was just kind of opportunistic, and there maybe there was something else coupled with it, you know, that they're fucking going through something else, and then it was just, you know, a bad mindset, and then worse situation, and then they're like, fuck it. So it's to have this idea is that, like you said, like they wake up and go, ah, you know what, I'm gonna unfairly find somebody, throw them in jail, and beat the shit out of them.
Right.
Maybe shoot them. Yeah. We'll see how the day goes. Yeah.
So that's about as close to an absolute as I will get.
I always feel like, you know, is that police officers go where the crime is.
Exactly.
It's like, if you're, most of the time, you know, if there's nothing going on, you're sitting in your car, maybe monitoring some traffic, listening to what's going on.
Right. And, you know.
And then, okay, there's crime. I'm going to go to that now. It's not like you're just cruising around going, that's the guy right there.
Right.
That's not how it works. And they think that's what the media portrays them as, that you guys are just predators out there on the street hunting people down.
Really, it's supposed to be the people that run towards danger. Sure. Supposed to be the ones that are like, all right, let's figure out what's going on and if we need to do something about it, let's do that.
You know, I mean, you look at any of the, you know, the YouTube videos of, you know, tragic things that have happened, whether it be law enforcement killed or law enforcement involved shootings or whatever, you know, yes, there is a higher likelihood in departments like Chicago or Boston or, you know, NYPD or LAPD or, you know, any of your major metropolitan areas.
It's concentrated
because you have the volume there
of people.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, but you look at a lot of those oh shit moments, as I call them, you know, where police officers are just doing their day-to-day mundane routine, and holy crap, I'm in the middle of a shootout. It tends to be small-town rural America, you know, because there's that false sense of security. You know, I work in, you know, Lebanon, Tennessee, or I work in, you know, Pigeon Forge. You know, I'm in a touristy area. Nothing's going to happen. You know what? You watch those videos.
Yeah, you never know.
You wear a badge, you wear, you know, shirt, whether you're working in rural Ohio or Chicago, it doesn't matter.
Right, but still law enforcement. Yeah. It's, you know, my dad would tell me, like, you know, as when he, you know, just kind of like, you know, he goes, domestic violence was, you know, rampant, you know, in a lot of the depressed areas in and around Ohio.
Yeah,
just kind of that white trash mentality.
Right.
You know?
Stay home barefoot and pregnant,
you know, and people, you know, and then in Ohio being very much part of the Rust Belt, and that was kind of like when the auto workers, you know, the unions were kind of leaving, the American car industry was in the toilet.
Mm-hmm. You got
a lot of people getting laid off on unemployment.
Yeah, making money.
So, which, you know, in turn, you know, created a lot of depression.
Well, I think that's a big part of it, too, is you need to keep jobs in there, and you need to keep a reason for people to wake up and go to work, because otherwise they're just going to start doing stupid shit and finding trouble.
And that's what happened. They would find trouble, and really what happened in my town was it was the drug trade.
Yeah.
And the great thing about Springfield was it laid in between Dayton and Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the big time drug dealers would live in that town.
Right. That makes sense.
And let that and make that flow.
Right.
You know?
They ship it to the two extremes and they're living in, you know, the nice peaceful area.
And then
trying to stay off the radar.
off the radar. And of course, you know, and I always felt that, you know, the Springfield Police Department was not, you know, the most reputable police department, to be honest with you. Sometimes, you know, I think the sheriff's department was better, you know, than the Springfield PD. I'm sure a lot of those guys were paid off to look the other way. And, you know, I think I told Jason this story where there was a guy who used to, you know, restore old cars in our town. Mershon's. And he'd fix up old cars and then he'd ship them out across the United States. People would buy them and he'd always have them like stop. They always show up at somebody else's shop. But what they discovered was that he was packing the seats with cocaine. and shipping it out to all these places, and then when they get there, they slice open the seats and pull the cocaine out
and put a new seat in. And, yeah, exactly.
But yeah, just the insanity. You know, I mean, as a young kid,
yeah, seats
just
really lumpy,
growing up,
what's
going
on back here?
You know, and just being in that environment. Even though my dad was a police officer, I was not the best kid.
Yeah.
You know, I found that shit and screwed around with it, and I'm just thinking, I'd never. If I wanted to take a hit of acid, there was no problem.
Yeah.
I could find it in that town
in
a second,
like,
you know?
Right. One of the funny things, like, being a cop, yeah, like, family friend that's one, like, I've lived with people who are the police department, is they're really, like, it's just like a person, so I wonder how much cops, like, are, like, understand that people are people, and, you know, it's, so it's, you can't look at somebody like, you know, like anybody's going to be a model citizen. And I don't think that's the way it's intended to be anyway.
Right.
Nobody out there has never broken a law in their life unless you've been in a coma for your entire fucking
right.
life.
And if you have, I'm
yeah.
going to go on the run and say,
like,
you're still lying.
You are
still
lying.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
Intensely
repressed. We've all sped.
Come on.
We've all rolled through the stop sign.
Yeah,
exactly.
Live
it up. Do turn
I've never
when
cut the phone
in
my hand. You know what I mean? Come on.
Cut the light when it was red.
Exactly.
Because the laws are meant to be, you know, proportioned that way so that you can take people and apply them as they should be applied. So does that's the same thing with, like, judges. Like, does that mean everybody that comes in gets a maximum sentence? That's why you have a minimum and a maximum. You're
right,
supposed
exactly.
to determine how severe that individual crime was, not based just off the law solely, because you can't do it like that. Otherwise, it would be the oppression that they're trying to claim it is.
Yes.
Like,
right. I will agree with you to a point on that. However, I will disagree on a point.
Sure.
I agree with you when it comes to the minimums and maximums, when it comes to sentencing guidelines and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But I really, you know, and this is where it gets thrown in our face, you know, that we're only enforcing laws because, you know, the person we're dealing with at that time is of a particular demographic, whether it be, whether it be black, white, Hispanic, you know, whatever.
Sure,
it makes no difference.
Sure, you've gotten that a few
yeah.
times, yeah.
But, you know, the thing is I truly think that the law, and not to sound like Judge Dredd, but, you know, the law is the law.
Right.
Yeah.
It is, you know, this is the expected conduct that society demands, and that's why the legislation was passed. Right. However, I think you'll agree with me on this, is, and I'll tell you the quick story just to get to the point, but after the Ferguson, issue, you know, with
yeah,
the shooting down there.
Hands up, don't shoot.
Yeah,
which
hands up, don't
shoot.
Turned
out to be a lie.
Really right, exactly. Yeah. But I had the occasion, I got invited to my old high school up in Chicago, or actually the Chicago suburbs, to speak. No, to speak.
Oh, cool.
It was a dais of alumni working in multiple facets. I was the law enforcement representative. There were others in the legal. But it was dealing with diversity and what have you. And we were doing this over the lunch hours. So we were there for the better part of 3 hours, and, you know, the last group comes in, and, you know, we go through our spiel, and, you know, young black girl raises her hand, and, you know, when I went to Loyola Academy, there wasn't a lot, you know, of minority students there, but they've gotten better, and, you know, there are more minorities there, and the girl asks, she goes, you know, my question's for the law enforcement representative. You know, obviously being a girl of color and having brothers and hopefully, you know, having kids one day, what would they need to do to avoid a conflict with the police? Well, and I kind of chuckled in the mic and I said, I'm sorry. I said, please do not take my chuckle as disrespect. I said, but this is part of the problem. I said, we've been here 3 hours going on four and you're the first person to ask anything close to that.
People are afraid to, because they're afraid to talk because they've been sold this mentality that you're just out to get them.
Right. So I said, first off, I said, the biggest thing is communication. I said, and that's,
I agree. Yeah.
And that's going to and from the police.
Yeah.
I will be the first to admit, law enforcement is not very good at communicating at times with the civilian population. I will readily admit that. And part of it is because of maybe the training at the original time or what have you.
Yeah.
But I said, you know, I said, here's the thing. I said, everybody wants to make it about race. I said, and I'm sorry. I said, I respectfully disagree. I'm white. I'm, you know, lily white Irish Catholic kid, and I've got two boys that I'm raising, and they're being raised the same way that the black community argues they shouldn't have to raise their children, you know, telling them how to keep their hands on the steering wheel. That's how I was brought up.
No, it was when the same thing. Stopped by the police. Yeah.
Right. So I said, you know, here we are in 2016. I go, everybody thinks this should be RoboCop.
Right.
I said, but that would present a whole different set of problems. I said, me as a human, I have discretion. So, yes, we do have laws. I will say the law is the law.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to what you were trying to say, with the police officers having discretion, do we arrest everybody we come into contact with? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I can stop somebody knowing they're suspended. Okay, fine. They're supposed to go to jail. They're supposed to get tickets. You know what? He's down on his luck. He's got a family, the two car seats. He's trying to work two jobs. Yeah. You know what? Dude, get your stuff taken
care of. Yeah, maybe the point I was trying to make got skewed, but that's actually point I was trying to make is, you know, you have that discretion. Mm-hmm. You can have that ability as a human being to make that decision and not be so bound by the law where
right.
you have to, you know, this is the only way you can do
like
your
Judge
job.
Like Judge Dredd, right, exactly.
Because the only way you do that is, like you say, if you lower your hiring standards enough, you're going to have to do that.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be able to allow people to make their own decisions, which they think they're solving everything by being hyper aggressive with, like, all right, you can't do this, and we need this individual committee for this. And every little thing you do needs to be, I have no problem with like body cameras or anything like that. I think they're good. I think that, you know, I right. like them and everything like that. But there's a mentality that you have where you're trying to live strictly by the law because you don't trust people's ability to make their own decisions. That's inherently wrong.
So. Right. Yeah, I agree.
But then, you know, with that too comes with a huge amount of self-accountability. You know, if there's one thing that I learned actually, you know, as
well, as
a young
I said,
man, you know,
great
I
power
got,
comes great responsibility.
I got, you know, in trouble in my own neighborhood. And, you know, but my dad figured it out. Police officer, mm-hmm. he's probably a pretty smart guy.
Yeah.
You know, and he calls me out on it, you
know,
at
the
dinner table.
Yeah, I'm sure he
knew
more stuff they told you.
And he goes, and he's like, you know what I have to do, right? Mm-hmm. He goes, I was like, I know what you have to do, Dad. And, you know, he went and called the police. You know,
right.
He's like, I can't, that's completely wrong for me to try to protect you.
Right, to sweep this under the rug.
To sweep this under the rug when I know it's you. And he told me that was the only time he was ever cool about any bad things that I did.
Yeah.
You know, hoping that maybe I would have learned from that lesson. But I had to go out and try a few more things. And
yeah,
you know, then you got smacked around a little bit. But then I tell people, it's like, I don't think my dad abused me. But
no.
But any ass whooping that I got from him
was
pretty much deserved.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I tell the story. You know, I mean, I've got the two teenagers now. You know, and I told them the story because they love Grandpa. He's so funny. He's so friendly. I go. Yeah, because he's the grandfather.
Yeah, yeah, you didn't know.
Yeah, you go home.
I said, you know, junior year, when I went to homecoming the one year, and everybody was taking the, you know, pictures with their dates facing the left, I had to take mine facing the right because my right eye was still shut. You know what? I raised my hand to my dad. I was, you know, what, 17 probably at the time?
Yeah.
And I got my ass whooped, and I deserved it. And, you know, my dad's 83, and to this day, I will not raise my hand to him. You know, and again, you know, you're going to have your growing pains. You just hope that you hope that the growing pains aren't going to be a lifelong problem.
You know,
I mean,
yeah, permanent. Yeah,
you know. I'm not going to lie that, you know, I've you know, gotten into it with mostly my older daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not with my younger daughter, but you know, I've smacked my kid around in the head a couple of times just because just wouldn't listen. You know. You know, I cleared out some little pet shops when they were kids when they wouldn't clean.
Hell yeah.
You know, when they wouldn't clean shit up, and you know, and I just remember their terrified little faces when I went out there and just kicked them clear across the room. You know,
that was a big part in growing up.
Then I thought, but as a dad, I went back downstairs. I'm like, that was actually pretty terrible.
But and again, I say this cautiously because yes, there is a difference between abuse and discipline.
Right, yeah.
Correct.
But I think, and again, this is just my opinion, and if you disagree, tell me. But I think a healthy fear of your parents and the police is a good thing.
Is a good thing.
No, I think we can talk about like context and subtlety, and there is a point where you go too far, and I think it has to do with your mentality of like, okay, why are you doing this, and is this necessary? Like, if it gets to a point where the only thing that's going to help this child, this person you're trying to raise to be a competent person in the world.
It's a rip on the
end. That's what it comes down to.
If there are other reasons that you're doing it, like, you know, it's like misplaced anger, shit like that.
Yeah, I mean, if they didn't clean the room and Chris brings the nunchucks up there and starts doing the Bruce Lee impersonation and Enter the Dragon, I'm going to call bullshit.
But
I smacked my kids in the grocery store, you know, when they were young, they're just in there screaming their heads off and, you know, I smacked him on the butt and like get looks at from like other people in there, and I just looked at him like, it's not your kid.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear this? No.
I think it helped.
I don't want to hear it.
I think it helped when I was younger. We're getting out.
We would go to the grocery store
when I was really young, like, you know, a couple years old, 4 or 5, whatever.
I think my mom wore me out in the grocery store with like one of the spatulas like they had hanging on the.
Well, there'd be those kids in the grocery store when they're wheeled around in the cart and everything, and there'd be kids and they're screaming in the aisles, and she'd point the kids out to me, and we would basically like, this is what started. I said, here, we kind of make fun of those kids for being spoiled brats. And that's what started at a young age, and it got the mentality like, oh, if you do that, people don't like you.
Well, I mean, you know, growing up, all my dad had to say was, you want to go for a walk? No, I know what happens on those walks.
Yeah.
You know,
it's always bad news for me.
And if you see Garrett and you say, hey, you want to go for a walk? He'll be like, no. Yeah. He goes, you know, he's had one or two already. You know?
It's just like, yeah, you know, and I think the old adage is, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, I'm not saying, you know, there's like I said, there's discipline and then there's abuse.
Right.
Absolutely. So, not to switch up the subject too much, but you mentioned Judge Dredd, and one of the questions I wanted to ask you
I just keep hearing Anthrax playing in my head.
Well, you know, I grew up in like the late 80s, early 90s and everything, so like, you know, there's a lot of, that's when like cop movies are really popular, and I had like people like, so do you have like a favorite cop character from some period, like if you had to pick somebody that you
yes, and actually my wife will laugh about it all the time. So Chris and I are close in age. I think a couple months apart, if I remember correctly.
Well, about a year.
Yeah.
69.
Yeah. So for me, in my humble opinion, the best all-time TV police show was Hill Street Blues.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and it was a really good show.
It was based on the Chicago Police Department, but you couldn't call it the Chicago Police Department, so that's why it was Metro back then.
That makes sense.
And Mick Belker was the guy that I wanted to be. You know,
yeah,
somebody,
that was
you know, working the street,
really
chasing people down, and
a groundbreaking show too.
Yes,
you know, as far as TV went and TV drama, and really kind of like kind of brought that kind of grittiness in of the
and the imperfection of police officers and law enforcement. You know.
Yeah.
Because you had somebody who was an alcoholic, you had a multi-divorced, you know, captain, you know, I mean, having an affair. It just, you know, Stephen J. Cannell was just magnificent writing that show.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I'll still watch it, but yeah, I think Mick Belker was, you know, that was one of the driving, I mean, I always loved the older, you know, rookies and SWAT, you know, from the
70s.
Yeah,
you
know, SWAT was always fun.
Was
and then was it Adam 12?
Adam 12.
Yeah,
and
Adam
then,
12,
you know,
Emergency,
if you needed the fire show.
But
I think once I got old enough, when I kind of knew this is what I wanted to do, Hill Street Blues was the one that kind of really pulled me in, and it was good.
Like,
you know?
Well, like you said, it's like when you're younger and, you know, hearing the sirens and stuff and wanting to go check it out, I was like, I bet there was a TV character, a TV show, where saw that guy, I was like, I want to be like that guy.
Yeah, I mean, I'll even tell you, like, we traveled to California the 1 year, and I found the firehouse that they filmed Emergency
at. Nice.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I, tell you, you know, every time they got a call and they had a run.
No, it was still, a Rampart.
But it was always Station 51, 10-4, KMG 365. They always used their FCC identifier. I still remember it. Why I remember it, I don't know.
But it's just funny. Yeah,
you know, it's pretty funny.
You know, like Ruth says, if I can get you to remember to clean the house, we'd be doing good, but you remember this shit. You know,
that sounds like my useless knowledge of rock and roll.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's not useless.
Or movie lines for me.
Or movie lines. Oh, I quote many a movie.
Oh, I know.
All the time.
I'm glad I found, like, throughout my travels, the small community of people who get way too into movies like I do.
You know, when you're, like, working in kitchens, you know you found, you know.
Yeah, kitchen people, for some reason, motherfuckers
you
watch
find
a lot of
kindred
movies.
Hearts when you spout something, a movie line, and they shout the answer back.
Yeah, oh, yeah, or finish the line, yeah.
Yeah, you're like.
Yeah. Like, that's your challenge or password. It'd be like, you're in.
Yep.
You're in the group.
Exactly.
Like, we're going to be friends now.
I gotta, you know, yeah, you guys got a few years on me and everything like that, but my late thing was like John McClane, like Die Hard.
I always loved Die Hard.
You know, it's in the Boston area, New York City, that's close enough.
I would say that the last probably like, you know, over-the-top cop movie for me would have been Cobra from Stallone.
Cobra was
kind of over-the-top. Yeah. You know, just renegade police officer out there.
Well, there is a little bit of
getting fired from the chief.
It's that cop who you know is a good person, but he doesn't exactly play by the rules. And he's kind of grizzled and he's kind of
Dirty Harry.
Clint Eastwood's fantastic.
The scene him overlooking San Francisco Bay and the partner comes up and, you know, don't tell me the blood and the guts and the gore has finally got to Harry Callahan.
Yeah.
No, I can still deal with that. You know what bothers me? No, what, Harry? How you can put ketchup on a hot dog. Nobody, and I mean nobody, puts ketchup on a hot dog. You know?
I mean, just, it's
a little shit, though, yeah.
And I hate to say it, but, I mean, you know, part of it, it's a survival mechanism for first responders is kind of that dark humor that, you know.
Right.
Well, it's
not being disrespectful at crime scenes,
first responders, military, people in the medical field, like people who are like surgeons or in the ER and stuff that.
Yep.
Like, they all have that same dark mentality. So, like, that's the way you deal with malevolence, and that's the way you deal with death. And that's, to this day, you know, that's the big thing about comedy. I love comedy. It's that tragedy plus time.
Yeah.
You need to take something that should be horrible, and it's just funny, because at some point, there's just nothing you can do about it. There's nothing you can do to prevent it from happening.
And I've said that to people.
Because otherwise, they'll just take you over.
You know. Not to get off on another side note, we in law enforcement, right, wrong, or indifferent, you know, even if we start off as the most amicable, you know, wide-eyed, naive person, you know, when we first get on, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, we're changed when we leave.
Correct.
You know, I mean, I said that to one of the bosses when I had my exit interview, if I really look at how I was when I first became the police, leaving Chicago PD, I'm changed. I might be, dare even say damaged a little bit. I don't want
to
say
you have to be a mild sociopath not to be.
I think everybody is it, but my point is it's how you deal with it.
That's a good point.
And I've had, luckily. I mean, I have a great wife, even though she wants to kill me half the time.
Right. Well, that's normal with wives.
Right, exactly.
I find that. They think they're crazy.
But I've had a core group of friends since kindergarten.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
And, you know, she will sit there and go, she goes, I love your friends.
Yeah.
But I just don't get it. I go, what do you mean? She goes, you're living here. Pat's in, Western Illinois. Tony's up in Upper Peninsula of Wisconsin.
Does their own thing.
You know, Brett. But you guys, it doesn't matter. You get around a card table, and it's like you never lost a step.
Yeah,
that was a big military thing for me. Like, a lot of my friends, because you get on separate. The only place I went out of country was in Guatemala. But, like, I went to my deployment down in Guatemala, and friends went to Afghanistan. And then, like, he came back at the same time. And I hadn't seen him for a year and a half. And then it was... like we just talked yesterday, we just picked right up. And after end of day formation, it's like, all right, meeting at there was a bar like right off post. We knew the owner and stuff. Meeting here, and we just like picked right up where we left off before.
Yeah.
Like nothing was changed.
Yeah, nothing was changed.
Didn't matter the time period that went by. That was still a person that I knew. And we were just like right back to where it was.
Yep. Never ended.
Yep.
Well, I think we're coming up on an hour right now.
Oh wow.
It goes by quick, man.
Jeez.
It goes by really quick.
I think it was,
we could go. I'm not going full Joe Rogan tonight. I'm not doing 3 hours.
I can't do 3 hours. No, but I appreciate you coming over and talking with us tonight, Sean, and kind of giving your insight, to what it's really like, and letting people know that, hey, you know what, police officers are actually people too, just like us.
Yeah, there's a person.
There's a person behind the badge. There's a person out there who cares. Actually, probably cares more about you than you think.
If there's one thing I can say before we end, again, going back to what I said earlier, I'm not a person of absolutes, but in my heart of heart, like I said, I don't believe what, and I'm not going to say mainstream, but just I don't believe what the media
or the certain camps are saying that, you know, law enforcement is wild and you know, off the handle. You know, nobody wakes up saying that this is what they want to deal with.
Right.
You know, they're there to do the job. They're there to do it the right way. Right. And, you know, again, there's a human element to law, you know, to police work, and there needs to be a human element to police work.
And, you know, and I firmly agree that, you know, law enforcement is what keeps us, you know, from being, that it keeps us being a civilized society.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kicking us off. All right, well, that's it. Thank you, guys. Have a great night. I'm here to remind everyone, if you're concerned with voter fraud through the mail, there's a simple solution. Wake up on voting day, take a shower, have some coffee, get in your car, drive to your polling place, get out of your car, put your mask on if you have to, stand in line, wait your turn, and then vote. That's how easy it is.